Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me, but from the corner of my eye I catch a glimpse of evil light. The fear tries to swallow me like I'm just some guy with an emerald. Everything. A purple man obsessed with me, so lost to the dark and it's now extinct. From any good it once possessed, pledged to the oath, now laid to rest. No time for doubt, no quick eject. Don't give in to fear like my father said.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
I'm Ben.
And John.
And you guys are wondering what you just heard at the beginning of our show, I bet. Well, for those who aren't familiar with Kirby Crackle, we have a very special guest with us this week. The creative genius behind Kirby Crackle. Everyone, please welcome Kyle Stevens to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Just, turn the computer off for the day and winding down. So I'm ready to talk a lot of nerdy shit if you are.
How's the we're in, on the East Coast in Philly, and we've been getting hit with cold weather and snow. How's the weather out in Seattle?
You know, it's been great. Further truth that we're killing the earth. It's been about 60, 65 degrees out here for the past week, which makes zero sense. And right. All the cherry blossoms are out, so I'm enjoying my last spring on Earth.
Here. Oh, well, there you go.
And actually, I just got back from Edmonton, and you know, very ignorantly, I left here with a jacket and a t-shirt because that's all you need in Seattle in winter. Right. I forgot it was 9 degrees in Edmonton.
Oh,
so that was fun. No, it was a great trip, but yeah, I didn't dress very warm, but I think I learned my lesson that just because the Earth is dying on one side of the planet doesn't mean a little ways north it's doing the same.
The results are inconsistent.
Yeah, the results of human failure are inconsistent.
All right. Oh, I almost forgot. Before we get into this, every week we do a little trivia thing with our audience members called Stump the Geek. I almost completely forgot to do it this week.
I almost had it.
Last week's question was a good one. In the 90s, Michael Jackson tried to buy Marvel, and the question was, why did he try to buy it? Do you have a guess, Kyle?
Why did... he's a big Howard the Duck fan. I don't really know. What Michael, is it some like conspiracy nice. Where Paul McCartney invented Spider-Man and Stan Lee was in the Beatles and something about him buying their catalog? I don't know. That's my
that would be more awesome truth.
That would yes, that would be the best.
I say we accept it.
The government will tell you I'm crazy, but I'm not.
Okay. No. Actually. It's a little simpler than that. He really wanted to play Spider-Man in the movie. So Whoa. He figured if he bought Marvel, he was a shoo-in.
Control.
Makes sense to me.
Kind of hard to argue with the boss.
So we got the answer on Facebook this week from Constance Chesney. So congratulations, Constance. You are the geek of the week. I won't say beard of knowledge because women don't usually have beards.
That you know of.
That I know of, yes.
That was my thing for a while. So be careful what you say.
This is true. So this week's question, in honor of us having a musical guest on the show, the question is, name three comic book artists who have done album covers and the albums that they did covers for. So you guys, if you know the answer... tweet at us with hashtag StumpTheGeekSpeak or put it on our Facebook. And again, we'll pick a winner like we always do.
We'd also That's like good to one. Include the hashtag and album cover.
yes. So we met last year at New York Comic Con.
Yes.
Yeah. And when we met, I didn't really know anything about you. I just saw this, you know, guy sitting next to the table I was working at with a guitar and a bunch of CDs.
Yeah, you're like, who's this Joker?
And so it got me interested, and I picked up your second CD. And
I remember that. Thank you.
Yes. And I was just taken aback by the music. And so I'm saying this to our fans real quick. You know, this seems like a bit of a left turn because we have a musician on the show, but what Kyle does is he writes what is known as nerd rock.
Which is my favorite new genre of music that I never knew existed.
Cool. Now there's like 14 people who know it exists.
Awesome. Yes.
Well, you know, you're on our show, so yeah, that's like 13 now. You got to subtract one.
Yeah, we may have lost one just now.
it's like my Twitter followers. It's like, I take two steps forward, one step back. Like, nerd thing, yeah. Offend. Uh-oh, how'd this happen? Like, we've gone in flux 50 followers today, and we're minus 5.
I think as a nerd, you have to count that as a success.
Yeah, I do. I do.
So, why don't... I guess we'll start out with... tell us a little bit about, you know, where this idea came from and how you got started writing... nerd rock, as it's known.
Well, I had started when I was playing guitar when I was 13, and we're going back, okay? We're going back to full,
all right.
full story here. And so it was a real cool thing. Looking back, I feel very fortunate that I was in a band with a lot of little buddies of mine, all 13, and no one knew how to play instruments, but they said, okay, you're going to play guitar, you're going to sing. And I guess, okay, I guess I'm going to sing and play guitar. And the drummer is like, you better learn how to play drums because we have a show in two weeks. Like that kind of just like crazy stuff. So we learned how to play kind of, I guess you could say learn how to play or whatever the equivalent of that is in like 2 weeks. And we did
high school equivalent of learning how
high
to
school. Yeah. In middle school at that time for us. And, so we did a talent show, and then we sucked really bad, and the band that won played Nirvana About a Girl, and we thought, this is not going to work. We got to get our game up more. So we were big comic nerds at the same time. And then that band went on to become a band called Layman's Terms, which I had in high school in the Seattle area, that was pretty popular among the high school crowd and college crowd. And at the same time, I was always reading comics and always putting like little jokes into my songs, not on every song, but I'd say one album had a couple little references that only I got and some of my nerdy friends got. And then I realized one day, why isn't anyone doing this in a way that reflects what works about our genre and what we love about comics and video games, about, you know, character growth and evolution, the trials and tribulations about different characters and storylines and longevity. Why doesn't anyone do that in a serious way instead of yelling, you know, Silver Surfer over and over again? Why don't they talk about, you know, what it would have to feel like to leave your planet and basically be someone's monkey boy, all the while just because you're trying to save your people. And so that was really interesting to me, combined with writing songs, like I had been writing, which were kind of, you know, mainstream rock pop stuff, but with a little bit of a twist now and then genre wise. I used to submit albums to record labels all the time, and they always said, you know, we like this, but you're just kind of all over the map songwriting wise, and you're not like one particular style. So thankfully what works for our fans, which we call crackleheads, is we kind of jump genres throughout an album, but it's still nerd rock, you know, like the thing that stays the same is the tone and dictation of subject matter.
Right.
Heaven forbid you should like more than one type of music, you know.
Heaven forbid. Like... Yeah. Well, we have a song called Grandma's House that sounds like Prince wrote it, and then we have a garage rocky kind of like Everclear-y song, which most people wouldn't put on the same album, but the thing that connects it is the passion that we have about the subjects and nerd rock from when we started. You know, we invented the genre in 2009. It was about a lot of characters and living kind of vicariously through those characters and talking from the perspective of said characters. And I think what nerd rock has evolved to, both with us and other bands that do it, is just things that you're passionate about. So if you want to sing about tacos, sing about tacos. It's still nerd rock. It's just, it's done with joy and enthusiasm. And I like that that's kind of where it's gone in the time since we started.
Yeah, no. And I definitely agree with the, There's a sense of humor to some of the songs that I really like. I think Zombie Apocalypse is probably one of my my favorite songs, because the juxtaposition of the ukulele and the real, like, you know, happy, easy song talking about, well, the world ended and it's the zombie apocalypse. And, you know, So is that something that's important to you too, is to make sure you inject some humor into your music?
It kind of depends. You know, I kind of, now that we've been doing this, I mean, we're coming up on our fifth full length album here in next month. And something that I'm always, you know, this is a business, and it's like, it's kind of, you know, we have a band, but I'm kind of the guy that runs all the sites and all that kind of stuff, is you kind of have to stay on top of everything and get the tone of how people interpret your music. You know, it's like, what is the thing that other people feel like you do the best, mm-hmm. and then kind of take that into consideration. It's like, for a long time, I thought it was the humor thing. And so when we wrote a couple songs that didn't have humor in them, I was nervous to put those out. Like, does that go against the whole Kirby Crackle deal? But what I thankfully came to find out over the years is the Kirby Crackle thing is, you know, a little bit of jokes, but putting the emotion and the human element of that character into the song. And thankfully, that's what people enjoy, because that's what I love so much about comics. You know, my favorite writers, my favorite artists are people that talk about the human element, and it's less fighting. I mean, there's a reason why no one likes Spider-Man 3, right? Because it was just fighting crazy, badass. I mean, it was like, looked amazing, it was crazy, but after a while, like, what does that mean, you know? And I kind of feel like the same way about jokes. If there needs to be a joke, then hit a home run with it. It should fit the story, exactly. Just don't put it in. Because, we should have a joke in there. But, you know, when humor is appropriate, like, I want to run with it, but not the sacrifice of the song. And for me, that's the whole deal. It's like people say, you know, why don't you have a Star Trek song? And what we kind of do now, it's the Set Your Phasers to Sexy song that we have on off our Sounds Like You record. And that's more kind of just like a fun joke to say, but they say, why don't you do like a song about, you know, the inner workings the mind of Captain Kirk and Spock and their relationship. And it's like, I would love to, but I don't think I could do that well. Because though I like Star Trek, I don't feel it on that level just personally. And I totally get why a lot of people do. But to me, that would be doing a disservice to the song and also our listener. And I would just feel like a big phony. So kind of a long roundabout answer. It's just got to fit what the vibe is in general, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, as any music is, it's somewhat autobiographical, you know, so you can only play to your own strengths. But I do like the, like you were mentioning, that it's, that your songs are, there's a humor there and a lightheartedness, but there's also is a, they have a pathos to them. You know, there's substance to them, like a, Ring Capacity that was mentioned before, you know, that it's sort of the story of Green Lantern, but it's actually really delving into how he, you know, is feeling about things and both emotionally and physically. And it puts it in a different light. It's very, interesting if you really pay attention to the lyrics.
Well, I'm glad you think so. Thanks. It's, you know, that's kind of what I think over the, so that song came on our second record, E for Everyone. And, that has been the song to kind of, in my mind, beat or whatever in terms of like having fans like another song more people. That's kind of like our flagship Kirby Crackle song, I guess, that we play for people right away because it's the kind of thing that works for everybody. But it's funny because that song was, I always say in interviews, it was written in 10 minutes, which is way shorter than it ever takes anything. So there's something to be said for like direct emotion to the point. Don't beat it to death. And I wish I could do that every time, but that's not happening.
Oh, it's like catching lightning in a jar.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like fortunate it happened, and if I could figure out a way to have that happen every time.
Yep,
you know what I'm saying.
Yes, then everyone would be a rock star if we could figure that out.
Let's all be rock stars. I'm still trying to figure out how to be. If you figure it out, you let me know.
No, and I'm really appreciating everything you're saying because – essentially, you're taking it and you're making it an actual art form in the sense of, you know, you're looking at the emotion behind it. Are you passionate about the subject? Are you look at it from the point of Hal Jordan, or look at it from the point of, you know, somebody who was in a zombie apocalypse, you know, and those kinds of things. And you're making it a true art form as opposed to, I have seen other bands do it, but they might just sing, like, they'll do a version of the Spider-Man song, you know, or they'll sing a song that's basically like touting the entire history of the Fantastic Four, but there's no substance behind it. You know, so you definitely have set, I think, a pretty high bar with the stuff that you write. And, you know, it's cool. So with that though, do you ever feel like you're being put into a box, you know, musically? People are expecting certain things from you when you say you're nerd rock. You know, do you ever feel boxed in by that genre? And, you know, if you don't deliver the song that people want, you get criticism back on that?
You know, I think I worry about that more than it actually happens. I mean, it does happen, but I feel like the loyal fan base that we've built, I mean, we're not a huge band, but I think we are doing well for an indie band, if that kind of makes sense. Like basically our whole thing is grassroots. It's responding to everyone on social media. It's wanting to respond to everyone's social media. You know, it's tweeting, you know, what's going on in our personal life. Hey, we found this cool article. Let's show, hey, here's the new Aquaman costume. Badass. I mean, that stuff, like, basically, we're just kind of doing, I'm doing what I would want to see if I was a fan of Kirby Crackle. And so sometimes I think that works for people more times. I think it works for people more times than not. And, you know, we have, like, with any band, there's people who will say, like, hey, our first record's the best and we haven't done as good since then. Or people are saying, hey, every record gets better. And that's kind of what I try to go for. I mean, nerd rock, it was kind of, you know, I say we started not in the way like we invented the whole wheel again, but I feel like we invented the genre of writing from the perspective of a comic book character in a non-joke form. Because I feel like that hadn't been done before. Or maybe someone in like Bulgaria has done it, and then I bow down to them forever. but I think because of that, and there's not that many people doing nerd rock, we get to kind of along with everyone else, decide what it's going to be. So I think at the beginning, people said, oh, it's about singing from the perspective of a comic book character only. And so what is this? Like, what is this song about on your next record? Is this about Superman? Like, nope, it's not about any comic book character. It's just about singing about, you know, being like a geek or a nerd in 2015, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I feel like what's been interesting to me, excuse me, as time has gone on, is kind of evolving how we do things and being more commenting on the culture more so than writing like our fifth Wolverine song. So you know, with our new record coming out, there's still, I mean, we have a song on there, Dancing Baby Groot, about, you know, what I felt was like the biggest failed marketing opportunity in the history of toys or cinema. You know, now stuff's coming out, but I thought, why is there nothing going on? Okay, let's write a song about it. And then, you know, a new song on the record, it's called Geek Culture is Dead. So I feel like when people read that, they're going to be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's their whole deal. Why are they saying geek culture is dead? But it's a commentary on people saying geek culture is dead. And it's basically just pop culture now. Like everything's all mixed in. This culture doesn't have an identity. So what the song talks about, and we'll be, you know, debuting it soon in the next couple of weeks, is it's not about it being dead, it's about it transitioning and kind of the world taking it. And then where do we fit in that as geeks and nerds, where that's kind of been our thing our whole life? You know, that's kind of been like the way we identified ourselves and that was our deal. So what happens when everyone kind of owns that? And that to me is the stuff that's like really fascinating. And I feel like are the discussions that I think we all should be having more so.
Right. Yeah, it is sort of an interesting transition that's happened, that the nerd culture has become the pop culture, and it's a very different, like, my kids are very into the same quote unquote nerdy things that I'm into.
Yeah.
But there's no stigma around that. Like, it's, they're perfectly able to, like, my daughter can be a Doctor Who fan, and, you know, my kids can love superheroes, and it's not, they're not ostracized for it to any degree, or feeling alienated from their friends because of it. So it is sort of a different, I would say it's a different kind of, you're right, it is sort of, it feels like it's dying, but transitioning in that way.
It's mutating. I feel like it's mutating, kind of. That's what I always say to people. Yeah.
Yes. But along the lines of that whole perspective piece, I was actually playing a couple of the songs earlier today for my kids, just to see if they could pick out who it was about from the lyrics, which they loved. They had fun with that.
Cool.
And the one that I ended up arguing with my son's 8, by the way, was nice. The Web Slinger one. He was listening to the lyrics, and he was like, because he says, sometimes hero, sometimes zero. And my son's like, well, that's not right. He's always a hero. I was like, yes, but he doesn't always feel like a hero. It's from his perspective. You have to realize that it's not, you know, yes, you may see him that way, but he doesn't necessarily see himself that way.
Yeah. And that's what's been so cool about Marvel from the beginning, right? Like people that are of a fault in some way. You know, like they don't get their kids don't like him, or their boss is on him, but, you know, if he only knew they were Spider-Man, you know, or when X-Men would play, you know, basketball or softball or something like that. Like not just because of the sexy superhero ladies when I was 12, but the Marvel swimsuit issue, you know, like I just thought that was awesome because they're just like hanging out. It's like, well, what's going on here? Are they fighting? Like, nope, they're just having some lemonade by the pool. It's like, they can do that? Okay, well, this is way cooler now.
Yeah, I've got that episode right behind me, actually, in a stack. Oh, God. Go ahead.
actually, something, too, along the lines of this whole thing is getting me thinking, you know, you're doing this independently, you know, grassroots, and you know, in today's world, it's a lot easier to do that, I think, than maybe 20, 30 years ago, you know, with the internet and social media. I mean, I know it's still not easy, but it's, you know, easier. But one thing I keep wondering, you know, from an artist standpoint, you know, if Sony Records was to come up to you tomorrow and offer you a record contract,
but you'd only be able to sing about certain Marvel characters, not the rest.
The question is, you know, would you go ahead with something like that? you know, at this stage, having, you know, independently put out as many CDs as you have, and you've worked so hard to find your voice, I have friends who are in the music industry, and I mm-hmm. was a musician in a former life. I know how it can be once you're in that studio and you have a record company behind you, because they can now turn around and say, oh, that doesn't work. Oh, you've got to change this. You know, is that something, would you want to give up creative control, you know, getting to a larger audience?
You know, that would be really, that's a good question, man. It would be really hard for me to do that. I mean, I've heard, you know, I'm really fascinated by the stories, by ones like you're describing, like people who turned in a whole record. And then the company's like, no, we don't like that. Go back and do it. Or, hey, here's our single. It's like, well, go play with this writer and then go play with this writer. And there's 10 different versions. And at that point, you just kind of hate the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be fascinating to take part in that just to see what that's like. I mean, for my life, I've just kind of been in this kind of independent bubble where there's no one really telling me what to do. I mean, telling me what to do in the way, like, I could write a song today and put it on the internet and people could hear it right away. I mean, anyone can do that. It's amazing that we live in a time where there's that accessibility. You know, the downside of that is that anyone can do it. There's so much noise to cut through now. You know, not saying my stuff is the best ever. People might say my stuff is noise too. You know, but I'm just like, everyone and their mom is trying to make, who's a musician, is putting their record out saying, hey, look at me, look at me. And that's a whole other set of problems. You know, like, when you post something on your Facebook page, if you put a link in it and a picture, people might not even see that just because of the weird algorithm stuff that they have. So it's not like people are going to see everything automatically that you put out, even if they're subscribing to the things and they're really into it. So getting in front of people is still a challenge on that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But what the labels do have that independent people don't have is distribution. You know, it's the same thing with web comics or independent comics versus if you go with Marvel and DC.
Right.
The promo machine behind that. I don't believe there's a steady paycheck for anyone anymore. Really, like, you don't work 50 years and get the gold stapler anymore. But, but, you know, to know where your next check's coming from the independent way, it's a constant hustle. You know, it's like a 24/7 thing that kind of never stops. And at the same time, it's only going to go as long as you want it to go. So you're kind of your own master. So it's a balance, and there's pros and cons either way. But, you know, I always joke about maybe the true success of Kirby Crackle is if 10 years from now, Sony Records has like Nerd Rock boy band. You know what I mean? Like doing everything that we and bands like H2 Awesome and Nerds with Guitars and Double Clicks and stuff are doing independently. Like, they figure out how to do it, on a grand scale. I mean, that would be the biggest compliment ever, you know, but, there's many ways to go. And I think as geek culture evolves, to go back to it becoming pop culture in general, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the music side of things, because the music side of things hasn't been explored by the big companies at all. I mean, when they have, like, you know, the Avengers soundtrack and stuff like that, they don't go to nerd rock bands who are already writing about this stuff and know mm-hmm. these characters. They go to like Nickelback and Buckcherry. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, and that's just because it's a big moneymaker, and all these record companies know that, and they have the contacts and they're in line and here we go. And I get how that makes sense, but it's just going to be really interesting to see what happens as it reaches this big cultural fever where it's already kind of at, but hasn't really approached the music into thing.
Right, right. Well, I think, too, it's one of those, you know, talking about geek culture transmuting into pop culture. I think what it is, you know, geeks, nerds, whatever you want to call us, is we were people that were passionate about something. And a lot of times it's something that's not accepted by the mainstream, like comic books, you know, science, sci-fi, fantasy, what have you. But you were just passionate about it. And you wanted to talk to other people about it and share it with people. And so now it's more or less you're allowed to be passionate about something and talk about it with people. And I think that's where the society is transmuting. Cause like,
I think also the internet has allowed people who wouldn't otherwise find each other, find common mm-hmm. interests, can do so. I mean, you figure when we were kids, you know, and we love Transformers and superhero comics and all the things that we loved. You know, it was, we might have found one or two friends that we could share those things with, but if we had the internet, we would have found thousands of people. And that's the way that the kids are growing up today.
Yes.
Yeah, the neighbor down the street, when you found out that they were into comics, you're like, that person just moved to my top number one person I need to talk to. You know, that kind of thing. Yep. Like, just to, like, you don't even have to really, like them. You just want to talk about this kind of stuff. And I always think, like, you know, you guys remember the first 21 Jump Street of the remake with Channing Tatum? And someone makes a comment about the environment, like, because it's like, that's what dorks are. They're like, dude, you don't care about the environment? That's messed up. Like, you know, that to me
yeah,
is just
sort
like
of
a whoa.
Antithesis. Big shift. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, and so I was kind of thinking along the lines, too, of things like Breaking Bad. It became this big iconic thing. Everyone was talking about it, but really wasn't a nerd show. But yet you'd go to conventions and see people dressed up as Walter White, you know.
True.
You know, it's just because people now feel comfortable of saying, hey, I really like this, and I want you to know about it, and I'm going to talk to you about it, and maybe you'll like it, too. You know,
and positivity and fandom is contagious.
Yes.
Right? Like when you see someone, like there's, our brains probably see that this thing, well, I know they do. I mean, there's been studies done. You interpret this thing that your eyes can't see when someone has that much passion and love and everything coming off them, and you want to be around that.
Right, right. Yes.
Yeah. So that just kind of swirls collectively. And that, you're right. That's why that stuff's so good.
Right. So speaking of things that you're passionate about, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit at the convention. Like I heard a little bit of Matthew Sweet in some of your music.
Yeah.
Who are some of your musical influences?
Well, I grew up in Seattle when I was, you know, when I got my first guitar, it was like the perfect time of the grunge thing, you know, and Seattle, you know, basically everyone 18 and over hated calling it grunge because that was their thing, right? But I was 13 and not invited to the party. So I was like, we're going to call it grunge in the paper. That's what it's called. I'm going to, you know, I would leave my house in North Seattle and go downtown and I'd literally feel like I was going to see Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, like just walking around, you know, like these guys kind of became my superheroes because I was into comics starting at like 8, right? And then, you know, full on into it. And then when I started to realize, okay, I could do this music thing and I was kind of good at it and I had fun and there might be something here, they kind of took over my fandom for a little bit. And so, you know, like the Seattle scene, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Screaming Trees, Mad Season, all those people were a huge influence stylistically and also the way that they present themselves as a band and the way they do their artwork. You know, for a Kirby Crackle Music fan club, I always include my handwritten lyrics as a PDF because I really loved getting that in the Pearl Jam records. And then, you know, as stuff kind of turned musically, I'd say from like 91, 93 was the grunge thing. And in 94, 95, 96, stuff got a little lighter, like Presence, United States of America, Matthew Sweet.
Yeah.
You know, early 90s, late 90s R&B started to become really influential to me. And then I started really getting into melodies and background vocals and stuff like that. And just anything that was really pretty was just like really mysterious to me. Like, how do people do that? You know, because I just had my little guitar and I couldn't play that well. And I thought that to me is magic. So I keep trying to chase like this magic thing. When I find something I don't know how to do, it's like, okay, I need to learn how to do that. And still feeling like it's magic, even though I've known how to play like, you know, Pearl Jam Daughters for, you know, like 18 years now, to me, that still kind of holds a real soft place in my heart and as like a forming of musical DNA. So I think when people hear that and they listen to Kirby Crackle stuff, they can tell like, oh yeah, that's where he's coming from. It's like verse, chorus, verse stuff that makes you feel good and you want to turn up in the car is kind of my deal.
Cool. Yeah. No, wow. 18 years that you just made me feel old. to think that song's been around at least that long.
Yeah, at least. I think I took some years off.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember, I remember that when seeing, I think it was Alive, was the first real grunge thing I saw on MTV, was the video for that. And I remember running to school and like telling my friends like, there's this really cool new band, Pearl Jam. You know, I'm like, what? What? No, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and for the first time in those, it was about the graphics too. I mean, even when they stopped doing videos, all that graphic and visual influence went into their packaging and the way they did that. And they would hire artists that wouldn't normally be hired for album stuff like that. And so to me, that's always been really important to have really strong visuals along with the music as well. Cause I mean, you can just go and do a crappy logo wherever and like, yeah, maybe a lot of people won't care about it. But for me, videos and album covers and stuff, it's kind of like, what clothes are you walking into the room with?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you want people to, I read that one time on a website, made a lot of sense to me. It's like the way you present yourself as a band or a comic or anything, like people decide whether they like it right away or if they even want to give it a second chance or even listen to see what you're about. And I get that because I'm the same way. You know, when you see something and it looks like it was kind of half-assed, again, you have that subconscious thing. It's like maybe the whole thing is half-assed.
Right.
So I know that was really inspiring to me, seeing what they did and then following other bands that did the same thing and trying to do my version of that. So, which is why we use great people like Jim Mahfood, you know, or Dean Tripp, guys like that that have really cool style. And so it's my way to kind of pretend like I'm a comic artist too, because I can't draw or shit. So.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you see a band walk out in Timberlands and flannel and ripped up jean shorts. You're expecting one sound. If you see them walk out in matching sequin tuxedos, you're expecting something completely different. So
cowboy boots or
thank you. But if you're wearing sequin tuxedos and red pumps, but then you sound like the Fugees, I'm like, I'm really into you.
I'd like to see the sequins with the cowboy boots. That would be interesting.
That's in Brooklyn somewhere, probably, I would imagine.
Nice.
So I actually have a question here that I wrote down earlier, but I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Marvel or DC?
Ooh.
Oh, big time Marvel. I try to do both, but years and years go by and I keep leaning more Marvel all the time, I have to be honest.
Well, that's because they're winning it all. I mean,
and it just seems like the way they did their characters always made them more relatable to me. You know, like kind of the everyman where someone had something wrong with them. And I love kick-ass costumes and space and all that stuff too. But for some reason, just me and a million people can't be wrong. I know people love DC, so it's just my problem. But other than like Green Lantern and Batman and stuff like that, I had a real hard time growing up connecting with the characters. I mean, it's the way, you know, one time, you know, not to name drop or whatever, but like we have been very fortunate to be friends with Joe Quesada from Marvel, who's been a big supporter for a while. And, awesome. And he told me last year, he said, you know, this movie's coming out, Guardians of the Galaxy. It's great. And he goes, it's about space. He goes, but the reason people are going to care about it is because all the music is from the 70s.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that connects you to Earth, right? And I'm like, that's genius. Like, that makes a lot of sense. Because if that wasn't there, it'd be a whole different vibe, man.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And it totally worked. It was...
Yeah.
Yeah. It was killer.
It was. But yeah, I agree with you. The DC has always been sort of the gods among men, you know, type heroes. And they're always in... And they're all in... You know, they have flaws, but they're minor flaws. They're weaknesses. You know, they're kryptonites, living in these mystical, you know, these non-existent cities.
Yeah.
Whereas Marvel has, you know, human beings trying to be heroes. You know, in cities that we know.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm down with DC. I mean, I love what they do too. But just I see a pattern over my life where it's like, okay, obviously I lean more that way just because the connectivity to that.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, John grumbled because he's our resident DC fan.
I did hear.
I tried not to.
He holds out hope.
So, and along the lines of that, because you had mentioned this earlier, and it's something that came out this week, and we haven't talked about it on the show yet because it just came out, was the pictures of Aquaman.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll ask your opinion of that. What do you thought of the look?
I am super down because I hoped they would go the Pacific Islander kind of deal.
Okay.
I really hoped they would. And it just, I think it adds some danger. I like Zack Snyder. I like the stuff that he's done. I don't like it as much as the Marvel stuff, but I do think they've got their own thing kind of going on that I really enjoy. And I feel like this is kind of like the rolling of the gamble of dice, like when people, like when they cast Chris Pratt as Star-Lord or something, where people were like, what the fuck? Like, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. I feel like anytime it elicits that kind of reaction from people, that's a good thing. Like, that means, okay, yeah. you're challenging the status quo. And, you know, the little nod to the fans, though, with the scale tattoos and also incorporating Momoa's own tattoos. I think yeah. it's pretty awesome. Like, if it's gnarly and it's barnacles and everything's kind of a little messed up, like, costume-wise, like, I'm into that. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I think they went a little overboard with the desaturating the picture, but I think as far as the style of the look, I'm okay with it. I think it's better than going with some sort of scale shirt that would yeah. have been an alternate angle.
So do you feel like if they kept it kind of more bold colors and didn't try to kind of hipster the image up a little bit, you would have felt better about it?
I think so. Same with as I felt with the Wonder Woman image. Both of those, they sort of took they sapped all the color out of the pictures. And it's obvious that there is more color there, but they're purposely yeah. taking it away from us.
Yeah, it's very stylized. And it's a Zack yeah. Snyder kind of thing. It's like a video game.
Right, right. I mean, it's the same thing with the Batman picture. Like, the only one we've seen so far, they made black and white, so you can't really tell the colors.
I don't think they're trying to grunge it or hipster it out. I think it's basically just they're trying to, Marvel's got
to
the
save
humor
something for the wedding day.
Marvel's got the humor side, and as we've heard before, DC is saying that they don't want like a whole lot of humor or whatever, and so they're going to be really serious and dark, and that's kind of what they're going for, is just dark and gritty. Although it looks like they left too much grit in the solution that they put the photos in, so they got to fix that, but.
We're all going to go see it. We're talking about it now, so they're doing something, right?
Yeah.
They're
doing their marketing right, even if it's wrong.
I was just kind of curious. Like, I was wondering, and you know, maybe I'm way off base with this, but like, I know that for a while in the comics, he lost his hand and he got a power, like a hand made of water, and he had the no shirt look, and you know, the Pacific Islander, as you said. But when they relaunched the new 52, they went back to the classic Aquaman look. But I kind of wonder if they went with that, the, for lack of a better term, the badass look because of the general, population's view of Aquaman, you know, from the Super Friends and whatnot.
You kind of like a joke on Entourage, stuff like that.
Right. Like,
yeah, they want to go back to the Bruce Timm Aquaman who'll kick ass and cut his own arm off if he needs to.
Right, exactly. But again, that's you know, Justice League cartoon that maybe not everyone has seen.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's familiar with what they did to him on Saturday Night Live. So it'll be interesting, you know. It'll be an interesting take. I'm sure everyone here is going to go see that movie.
Well, everyone's going to bitch about it, but everyone's going to go see it anyway. So
exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
Because we're nerds and that's what we do.
And then they're going to bitch more about it after they've seen it.
Then we'll see it again, just to prove our friends were right or whatever.
Right, we have to be correct on details. So
right. We have to, when we argue it, we need to know we're right or wrong.
I do feel bad sometimes for DC though. I take that back a little bit because they are trying something new with the gritty thing. Well, that's not, I would think, to be the best choice. They're trying something new, so props to them for that. But I mean, I feel like they still have to come up with Avengers 1.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for them in that way that they're, is it about chasing, well, it's about chasing the dollar for sure, but it doesn't come across as a labor of love like the Marvel movies did to me at least. It feels shit, we got to get our Justice League because there's money out there. So maybe I'm interpreting that wrong, but it seems like let's play catch up without doing all the build up that Marvel did.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I think the part of what made the Marvel movies work is because of the buildup. You know, Avengers worked because of Iron Man and because of Thor, because they had those setups and establishments beforehand.
Yes.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, no, and it just seemed like they had a plan of doing a Batman Superman movie and building it from there, but I don't know. I don't really think, because people keep saying, oh, they're shoehorning a Justice League movie into this Batman Superman movie. I don't really think so. Like, yeah, we know Aquaman's in the movie, but maybe it's just a 2-second cameo just to establish the character, you know, or like a 1-minute cameo just to establish the character in the world. So it makes sense in Justice League. He's not going to be a prominent character in the movie.
I think they're trying to skip 3 solo films having this little stuff. So it's like, okay, that counts. And then here's Justice League.
Right. Yes. Well, we'll all see next year, I think. We talked about this last week a lot, but I'll ask your opinion since you love this stuff and you're a Marvel fan. How do you feel about the Spider-Man coming home kind of to Marvel?
I think it's just they got to be so excited. It's like a big toy box that they know how to do right and probably been biting their nails seeing how it's been done.
Right.
I mean, I like the first one a lot. I like the reboot with Andrew Garfield a lot. The second one, not so much. That to me was trying to be too jokey in a corny way. Like the stuff with Electro was to me like felt a lot like Spider-Man 3. But
right.
Felt forced.
Yeah.
I kind of hope they don't get rid of Garfield though, because I feel like he's put his time in. And I felt like the last one wasn't his fault. I mean, maybe they're gonna go Miles Morales, which could be cool too. But I kind of feel bad if they're just like kind of, for lack of a better term, Brandon Routh him out of there.
No, that's a good term actually. I like that term. Because I agree with you. I think Andrew Garfield's okay. I think he has made a better Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire has.
Oh yeah.
You know, we've debated this a couple times. I think Tobey Maguire made an okay Peter Parker, but he made a horrible Spider-Man. Andrew Garfield has definitely got the Spider-Man part better.
Yes.
He could use a little bit of refinement on the Peter Parker part, but I could definitely see him coming back into it, but I don't know if Marvel sees it that way or not. We'll find out, I guess.
Right. I'm still waiting for the call for Colossus, man. I don't know if that's going to happen for the Deadpool recast. I mean, the Deadpool recasting. Because I'm like the world's biggest Colossus fan.
Yeah.
But I think I got a lot of working out to do if that's ever going to happen. So, and that's not going to happen, so let's assume not.
Oh, okay. Yes. You'd have to get as big as Ben Affleck did to play Batman.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if the next album sells well, you can buy a weight set and, you know.
Hey, man, I got 15 pounders from Target last week. I'm on my way.
Oh, there you go. You're set. You are.
If Chris Pratt can go from Andy Dwyer to Star-Lord, then anybody can get in shape for a movie role.
What do you guys feel about the Deadpool thing?
I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Deadpool is just too much fun.
The Colossus thing to me makes no sense. Am I missing something as a big Marvel guy? Did I miss some obvious thing about that? Or,
well, I've yet to see. I'm holding some judgments until we get more solid details. There's a lot of stuff that's coming bubbling up right now, and I'm taking all of it with a grain of salt. I'm glad that they're moving forward with it. I'm glad that Ryan Reynolds is involved, and that they're, you know, hopefully treating it right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're getting a lot of different pieces of casting news and snippets of supposed plots based on the character descriptions. And I think that, I think there's still a bit of wait and see to see if what the real meat of it is going to be. Hopefully they don't hopefully it's not like Wolverine Origins bad.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. I think it'll be like Van Wilder voice acting kind of stuff. Hopefully, like his, like, yeah, you know, the cadence he does. But no matter what, we know that Robert Liefeld will tell us right away.
Yes. Yeah, no.
Follow his Twitter.
And I follow him on Facebook. I definitely think Ryan Reynolds at this point knows that, because Wolverine Origins wasn't his fault. That was definitely writing and whatever they were drinking when they decided to end it the way they did.
Yeah.
The
luckily Days of Future Past erased all of that from existence
by design.
Right. Yeah, I think you could also argue a lot of the Green Lantern movie was writing and directing.
Yes.
You know, so, but he knows, I mean, he definitely, I think, is listening to the fans at this point, and he knows, like, 3 strikes and you're out. This is really his chance to, like, shine as a superhero. So I think, you know, if he has any creative control over this movie, You know, it should be pretty good, hopefully.
He has already been in three superhero-related movies, though.
Say that again?
He was in one of the Blade movies as well.
Oh, that's right. He was in Trinity.
Mm. So, that was the coolest, though.
But he's playing, Deadpool.
That was not a strike. That was a ball.
He's playing Deadpool. He can change the rules if he wants. He breaks the fourth wall all the time anyway.
That's true.
Yeah, it might be next level stuff, because from what I hear, I might be wrong, that it's not high budget, which means they got to really pull everything out of their ass cool-wise that they can in terms of, like, camera angles and breaking the fourth wall stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff that people will love. It might be a big cult thing. We don't know.
Yeah.
You're going to have an actor dressed up as Ryan Reynolds walk into the theater as you're watching it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Or have Ryan Reynolds play for Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool in the movie.
Yeah, as long as, within the first 5-10 minutes of the movie, he turns to the camera and starts talking to the audience, you know, about being in a movie, I'll be happy, you know?
Yeah. They can do a lot of cool stuff. And the thing about the X-Men movie that sucked so bad that Wolverine Origins and stuff like that. It's like, I think we all forget, and I forget all the time, there's so many people that go into making a movie who don't know anything about anything but have a lot of say and can even change at the last minute. Like, you know, these independent movies and stuff like that, when people have investors and the way contracts are written and everything, though Origins was an independent movie, I think it kind of had more of that vibe at Fox and not in the Marvel Disney machine, is that people who just don't know shit can come in and be like, oh, it's called this actually now. Or, oh, he has weird scars on his mouth now for no reason. and can't do anything about that.
Right.
Or the turtles are from space now.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, when you say the X-Men movie that sucks so bad, you have to be much more specific.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I'm not talking about three. Or maybe I'm talking about the Gambit movie that isn't out yet. I don't know.
Oh, jeez, yes. That one I'm still holding my breath for,
Don't turn blue.
Waiting to pass judgment till I actually see something, you know.
Yeah. No, man, that's going to break my heart if it's trash.
Yes. No, definitely. That would not be good. Oh boy. So then what is the, what's the next big movie you're looking forward to?
Well, I got to see The Kingsman.
Okay. That one does look
good.
Yeah, it looks really fun. And there's just like this crazy thing in the middle of it that no one will say, like this crazy, violent, insane thing that happens. And I just need to know what that is just because Twitter keeps talking about it. Let me see here. What else is coming out? The Moby Dick movie with, Chris Hemsworth. I want to see that.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, the five different movies coming out from the woman that did Bridesmaids. I forget her name. the one who took that guy in the bathroom on the plane or was in love with the Secret Service. Melissa McCarthy. Yeah, I love her. But mostly, man, it's all about the return of Vikings for me right now.
Nice.
On the History Channel. Do you guys watch that show?
I haven't, but I've heard good things about it.
It's amazing. I'm like the one PR machine for that show. People like, don't go by the Kirby Crackle booth because like, I'll just talk to you about Vikings the whole time.
Well, maybe they should hire you to do PR for them.
Next con, I'll just walk over there with a horned helmet.
Just
to spawn conversation.
I think the Chris.
Well, one time, like, what was that?
Okay, I was going to say, have you heard about Vikings? I wrote a song about it. Here's how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. No, people say that. Why have you done that song about Vikings? I'm like, that's too big a mountain to tackle for me. I can't do that. Right. Some things, when you're emotionally invested, you just can't go there.
You know, actually, speaking of songs that you've written, I wanted to ask you something. Your song, Up, Up, Down, Down?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that song, by the way.
It's another great funny song because it has a great turn at the end. I won't ruin it for anyone who hasn't heard it yet, but as soon as you're done listening here, head on over to KirbyCracklemusic.com and listen to it. But I was wondering, given how the song has that turn and how the song ends, was that one of those where it was like people were going up to you and saying, oh, you've got to write a song about the Contra Code?
No, God, really?
No, you know, I feel like maybe that would have happened if we didn't do that first, but like that wasn't our first CD that we put out and no one knew who we were. Like, here's our first CD, like that kind of thing. Okay. But it was one of the original songs, that one of the first three that we wrote. The first song we wrote was Back to the Beginning, the Mario Kart song,
right,
which kicks off the record. So we did that, and then we went, whoa, like, this is really fun. Do we want to do this as a thing or what? And so that's how, that was kind of the first song that got the project and the band going. And then, you know, the Contra Code, I just kind of had this melody in my head, and then it just kind of wrote itself. And it's the same chords over and over and over again, but the verse melody and chorus melody are different. But then the whole end thing that we won't spoil for people, was just like a big WTF moment. Like, let's just do this. And that's actually the number one comment on YouTube for a long time, which is like, WTF, like, what did I just see? Like, the video even makes it more disturbing. I don't know if you guys have seen the video at all.
Oh, yes, I haven't seen it there yet.
I'm going to have to see it now.
Yeah. And it's the one tear that gets me. I like to think that's the part that makes people weirded out at the end. But yeah, that was really fun. And so that's a song that we have to play every time. And the first record, we didn't go into the big studio. We just kind of did that at home,
right,
for that. And so, you know, that's the production on that is obviously a little different than our other records. People hear that, but we went and we re-recorded five of the fan favorites off the first record to put on our geekiest hits, mm-hmm, that came out in early 2014. And so there's two versions. There's the debut album acoustic version. And then there's the kind of more beefed up version, how we play it live on the geekiest hit. So that was really fun to go back and do.
Nice.
Cool. All right. Well, that satisfies my curiosity behind that song. we're getting there. We're about an hour.
Whoa, it's been an hour?
Yeah.
So talking nerd stuff, close, man. It makes time change.
Yes,
it does. Time flies.
So, One of the things I kind of wanted to ask you, now that, you know, you're an independent, you've been doing this for a while, and obviously you're very passionate about this, about your music and what you're doing. How did you define success?
That's a good question. I think it has changed for me over the years. Like, for a long time, it was to get signed to a record label, and that define success, because that's what did define success forever, right? And then, mm-hmm, on the internet and you know, web 2.0 or whatever you want to call it came around with MySpace and Facebook and everything, and like, okay, now you can actually get in touch with people, now you can put your, yeah, stuff out there and have immediate access. So what does that mean? And in some ways for me, you know, and it kind of, the morning stopped at the beginning of Kirby Crackle, but before Kirby Crackle, and I was still just doing my regular kind of non-nerd rock songs or whatever you want to call it. It was kind of a morning realizing, whoa, now there's not a clear path. There's not this huge carrot that I have to keep trying to throw like darts in the dark to get.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, independent comic artists, independent musicians, you can make a living doing that. It just, I think it goes back to what you said about passion. Like, how passionate are you about it? Because I'm always passionate about Kirby Crackle, but you know, I'd be lying if I said there weren't times where I'm like, man, this is like really hard to write the song this month, or this record is harder to make for this song just because other stuff going on in life or whatever. But I keep coming back to it because it's just kind of what I've done forever. And not just for that reason, but I think I really just deep down, I don't know how to separate myself from that now. To me, it's like, you know, our new record just sounds like me. It doesn't sound like something I was trying to do. I feel like, mm-hmm, that is an extension of myself. So for me, doing it now for, you know, I'm 35, doing it for as long as I've been doing it, it's, you know, 20, 22 years, is a personal connection thing to me is that what's really important and what I kind of define success for myself. Yes, I would love to sell a million records. Yes, I would love to have every comic convention want to come and bring me out. You know, now some do, some I go on my own dollar. It just kind of depends.
Mm-hmm.
But in a world where anyone can stay at home and watch Netflix and have unlimited amount of movies they could watch forever, you can go on iTunes, you can do whatever, you don't have to leave your house for entertainment and you're fine. I define success as if someone drove 30 minutes to come to my show. Or if someone says, hey, I own every Kirby Crackle record and I can get it digitally, and I did, but I need to have the physical copy too because I have the tradition of doing that. And so to me, the feeling of success that I'm always trying to chase is a personal connection
with Kirby Crackle fans, and also am I being honest with myself about why I'm doing it? So we didn't do a record last year because I didn't feel like I had a new record in me. And I could do it, and I could have put it out, and we could have made money on it and probably done well, but I would have felt shitty about it because I felt like I didn't have something to say. But, you know, with our new record, you know, Mutate Baby coming out next month, to me, it's like, okay, this is important for me to say this stuff. And because it's important to me, I feel like that will be important to our fans because that's always worked in the past. So it's kind of like this loyalty thing between myself and our fans where I don't want to assume people just want to buy something or get a new song because they haven't heard a song for a while. Like, there has to be a feeling behind it because that's kind of what Kirby Crackle has turned into for me, if that answers your question.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. I mean, and you know, as we've been saying this whole time here, I mean, you know, it's not just music, it's art, you know, and any true art is truth. And if you don't feel that you can be truthful and put an album out, then, you know, there's no passion in it, then don't do it. So I totally get what you're saying, you know, as long as you're passionate about what you're doing and you can connect with people on that level, that's success. That sounds great.
And it's not, I mean, and the thing that I think too is like when I grew up, and I don't know if you guys felt the same way, it's like whatever your passion is, like you have to be into it 100% of the time. It's like your whole life, like this tortured artist thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realized like, no, it's not like that because life isn't like that. It's not black and white. There's a lot of gray in between everywhere. And some shows, you know, I'll be like, I played my ass off and people are like, it was okay. And then shows that I was like embarrassed to go out and talk to people out there, and they're like, that's your best show ever. It's like, what? That's insane. That makes no sense. But, you know, I mean, at least it works like that too on that end, you know, not just on the I did awesome, no, you didn't kind of part.
Right, right.
Well, we're always our own worst critics.
That is true, man. That's true. So if we're really into our own stuff, we know it must be okay. If, like, you know, the time comes where you're okay with something, it's like, okay, it's probably okay. If you're your own worst critic.
Yes. Well, except for here, Ben and I are John's worst critic, but that's another story.
Thank you. I think
we're all our own, each other's worst critics.
Oh, that's true.
Well, it's good to have buddies to keep you honest too, because you know they're telling you the truth either way.
And I am so honest right now.
I'm totally feeling your honesty over here.
I'm like, keep it 100 all the time.
So with the new album coming out next month, are you going to be on tour supporting that?
Yeah, you know, conventions have kind of been our tour over the past 6 years. You know, we do about like, I'd say like 8 to 12 different conventions a year. And then like little one-offs come, like just a comic shop brought me up to Edmonton to play their grand opening, and I do stuff like that a lot too. But this year I'm kind of wanting to do more kind of non-comic stuff, Comic-Con stuff too. I mean, we'll do our deal, but I also want to cut across the middle of the country, which I've never done, and just kind of do the house party thing and just really kind of connect with our hardcore fans.
Cool.
On that level, like, you know, stuff that I would like to do, like if a band that I was into did, kind of mix it up. Sometimes I go by myself, sometimes it's the full band. It just kind of depends with the convention and, you know, what touring budget allows.
Right, right.
But yeah, I want to get out. I'm really excited to get out and play these songs because the songs on Mutate Baby, and it's out March 17th. People can pre-order it on our site if they want, if they're listening to this. It's songs not only about comics and video games, but it's also about, you know, what we're saying is like embracing your awesome. Where I feel fortunate in my life in the way that I was raised, that my mom was really supportive and my parents were really supportive of what I did, like almost to a fault sometimes, but they were just kind of trying to let me be my own dude. And I feel like, a lot of people were taught the same thing and a lot of people weren't taught the same thing, but everyone is deserving of that, I feel. So some of the songs on here are just like real positive, kind of like, you know, do you, chase your dream kind of stuff. In a way that I wanted to do that wasn't corny, but was kind of realistic to the times that we live in. So I'm really excited about that new angle for the record and seeing what people think about that. And I'm actually like a little nervous to play those songs. So that tells me like, okay, this is different. This is good.
Yeah. Exploring some new territories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool. So, as we're wrapping it up here, you know, where can people find you online? I know that KirbyCracklemusic.com. Where else can people reach out to you and catch your stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm really active on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. We have a YouTube channel. KirbyCracklemusic.com is the hub for all these things. For the past 6 months, it's as of now, I think, no, actually 8 months old now, we launched this thing on Patreon, the Patreon site called the Kirby Crackle Music Fan Club. And what we do there is we put out 2 exclusive fan club songs a month. So basically, for $4 a month, you get songs that are not going to be available anywhere else except you're in the fan club. So it's a mix of alternate versions of original songs that we have, covers, parodies, just weird stuff. And so it's kind of been a real cool kind of place where I've gotten to experiment and stuff that I didn't want to necessarily put on an album, but I definitely wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of keeps the Kirby Crackle machine going, does more convention appearances. It's a way to support Nerd Rock. So if people want to find out more, just go to KirbyCracklemusic.com and check the Kirby Crackle Music Fan Club.
Cool. All right. So, all right. Unless Ben or John has anything to add, I think this is a good place to wrap it up.
No, I think it's been very great. I have a lot more videos to watch now.
Yeah, I think if he wants to play Colossus, I think subliminal messaging in his songs would work really well.
or just doing the thing like Tyrese, who wants to play Green Lantern and like the reboot or whatever. I should just put foil on my arms and then like draw a circle with a Sharpie all the way around.
Absolutely, yeah. So like, I think you should do that.
Hollywood,
do that at
come
shows.
Come get this. They'll be like, no, we don't want that. Oh, shit.
All right. So as we
and find some little guy with claws to throw into the audience.
Yes. See, I like you guys. See, I will do that, though. You shouldn't have told me that. That's...
Oh, no.
I'm going to call Vern Troyer. Okay, you'll see it on the internet someday. I don't know.
Awesome. I'll be watching.
All right. So as we leave you guys this week, we're going to leave you with... I guess it's the first single off the new album.
Yeah, it's the first one. We're launching the new one in a couple of weeks, too. But this is a... No spoilers, please.
Yes, which I think all of us have felt this way one time or another in our lives. So,
yes.
So yeah. So, as... You know, listen to that. If you dig what you heard, definitely go check these guys out. You know, I'm sure you'll be at New York Comic Con again this year. Look for them at a convention.
Hoping so.
Look at them for a convention near you. Buy their stuff online. These guys are great. They're fun. Yeah. So, as always, ladies and gentlemen, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Out. I put my time in and I'm hanging around to see how everything has gonna work out in the end. I don't know how to feel and I don't know why. It seems like everyone's trying to rush through their life. Like knowing how it ends is better than taking the ride. Yeah, we're moving too quick, need a rest stop. Don't need a cheat sheet, baby, you can blast off. No spoilers. No spoilers, please. Don't try to tell me I'm taking my time. I'm trying to live good and I'm trying hard to write a story that I'm proud of, though I don't know yet how it ends. People come and go, but our hero remains. Lines on his face, but his heart stays the same. Where the black of the ink meets the white of the paper's green. There's only so much time that we're working with. No chapters here that I wanna skip. No spoilers, please. You know that I'm too far down this road of mine to change my lane. Turn this car around or drive ahead. I hope I'd say no spoilers. The party's always going on. The bar. never dies, so don't be scared. They'll try to rush you through because that's how it works for them, but don't let them. No spoilers, please. You know that I'm too far down this road of mine. Change my lane. And if I could, if I could turn this car around or drive ahead, I hope I'd say no spoilers, please.